As it's really good that you are joining for the extended look at Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 to 16. And looking in particular at the four women that were mentioned in Jesus' family tree. You know, as we start the book of Matthew, we come across Jesus' genealogy here. It's 14 generations of Jesus' family. And we're going to look at these people who were in that story. Because when I'm reading my Bible, I don't know how you feel, but for me, I skip across genealogies really quickly. When there's a family tree, I'm like, oh, how's this relevant to me? It's not normally that relevant. And I sort of speed past it as quick as I possibly can. But in Matthew's gospel, we'd be really wrong to skip through it very quickly. Because there's so much significance in this story. There's so much significance in what they share. I remember at school, when I was younger, it all seems like a long time ago now, we were always told that the most important part of the story is the first part. Now, what we need to understand when reading Matthew's gospel, especially the Christmas story, is Matthew was writing to a Jewish audience. These were people who were waiting for the Messiah to come. They knew the signs to look for the Messiah. And one of the main signs to look for, the Messiah was going to come down a certain family line, down a certain family tree. So Matthew knew this, and Matthew knew the prophecies. So what Matthew was trying to show is how Jesus was the Messiah. He was trying to really give the evidence, put the evidence forward for these Jewish followers to know who Jesus was, to know his credentials, to know his background. So in Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, it says this. God says, this prophecy, God says to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. Now this was a sign that the blessing for every family in the earth, as it says, was going to come through the line of Abraham. So it was really important the Messiah was descended from Abraham. Then, if we look at Numbers chapter 24, verse 17, it says this, I see him, but not here and now. I perceive him, but far in the distant future. A star will rise from Jacob. A scepter will emerge from Israel. This refers to the fact that God was going to raise someone up from the family of Israel, from the line of Jacob. So it's really important that the Messiah comes from the line of Jacob. Then you have Jeremiah chapter 23, verses 5 to 6, and it says this, For a time is coming, says the Lord, when I will raise up a righteous descendant from the King David's line. He will be a great king who rules with wisdom. He will do what is just and what is right throughout the land. And this will be his name. The Lord is our righteousness. In that day, Judah will be saved and Israel will live in safety. That was another prophecy that the Jews were looking for the sign of Messiah coming, that he'd be born from David's line. Now, all the Jewish readers who were reading this would be reading this first genealogy going, you know what? There's something. This could be Jesus. It raises the possibility that this guy who Matthew was talking about really could be the Messiah. Now, the quick thinkers amongst you will quickly say, Jim, but I thought it's talking about Joseph's family tree here. I thought Jesus wasn't in Joseph's family tree. He was just adopted into Joseph's family. That's true. But for the Jewish readers, they wouldn't really care about Mary's side, for want of a better word. They wouldn't care. They were worried about what Joseph's line was. And if you read Matthew chapter 1, verse 16, he's very clever to distinguish that Jesus is not Joseph's biological son. Because he says here, Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Mary gave birth to Jesus, who was called the Messiah. Now Matthew's very clever here. He's added all the prophecies from the line that Jesus is coming in. But he's also stopped short of saying that Jesus is Joseph's biological son. He hasn't said that. He's implied, actually, there's a difference here. And what puzzles me here, though, is if you were looking at this family tree, if you were God, and you were sort of being born into a family line, you probably choose a good, respectable line. And then at least when you were inspiring Matthew to write the Gospels, you would get him to focus on the good people, not the bad. But for Matthew, he focuses on just as much the bad characters as the good characters. But he mentions four women. Now, you've got to understand this from a Jewish perspective, is Jewish men in the day of Jesus used to say this. They used to wake up and they'd pray. They'd say, thank God I'm not a woman, and thank God I'm not a Gentile. That means a non-Jew. They really were scathing of women and non-Jews. And for Matthew to write this genealogy and to mention four women was like, whoa. And three of those four women being non-Jews, it's like, why? This is crazy. And the four women he mentions are Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. The PowerPoint will be available online. Hopefully you can find it on the website. Just have a quick read through and you can find out a bit more about the passages that I'm reading. But I want to talk about these four women that were mentioned, who for the Jewish thought, maybe not for our thought, but for the Jewish thought to the day, were undesirables. You wouldn't want to put these in your family tree. The first one is Tamar. Now, this is the lady who you find her story in Genesis chapter 38. Tamar was a non-Jewish woman, and she was married to Ur, who was Judah's son. So Judah is one of the tribe of Judah, okay, the founder of the tribe of Judah as such, one of the Israel sons. And Ur was a wicked man, and it said that God removed him, basically killed him, okay, because he was so bad. Now, the Jewish custom of that day was when a man died, his brother then married his wife, got his wife pregnant, this child that was born as an heir for the rest of the family. Now, this is what was supposed to happen. So Ur's brother, Onan, wouldn't fulfill his duty of getting Tamar pregnant. So he married Tamar like he was supposed to, but he refused to get her pregnant. He made sure that she wouldn't get pregnant. I won't go into details. You can read it yourself. But then it says God assassinated Onan. He took him out as well because he thought Onan was evil for not leaving Ur any descendants. So Tamar was like stuck because her husband had died. Her now new husband or brother's her husband's brother, he died as well, and there was only another next family relative. The younger brother was going to take quite a while before he was old enough to get her pregnant, and by that time she's probably going to be too late. So she had to work out, what is she going to do? She went back to live with her family, and she felt abandoned by her husband's family. So she thought, right, how am I going to do this? How am I going to have a descendant? So what she did was she dressed up as a prostitute. She then stood at the side of the road where her father-in-law was going past her. And he used her services, for want of a better word, not realizing that this was his daughter-in-law. Soon afterwards, she gets pregnant from her, finds out she's pregnant, and happens to be her father-in-law. Now, her father-in-law is really angry. He goes, I'm going to kill her. I can't believe she slept with another man. She's been a prostitute. Until he discovers that he's the guy who's got her pregnant. And that's one of the lines that Jesus comes from. It's a bit interesting, isn't it? Quite a first person mentioned here. First woman mentioned even in Jesus' genealogy was pretended to be a prostitute and got pregnant by her father-in-law. Not kind of the person you'd celebrate. Then you have Rahab, we move down here. And Rahab, we meet her. We don't know too much about her, but we meet her in Joshua chapter 2 and 6. And she helps Israelites. When Israelites came out of Egypt and they're going towards a promised land, they come across Jericho. And God was going to help them take Jericho. And the Israelites sent two spies into Jericho to check it out. And the person who helped them was Rahab, the prostitute. And she got adopted into the Jewish family. And she's mentioned as a great woman of faith later on in the New Testament as well. But again, she was a non-Jew. She was a prostitute. Why is she mentioned in Jesus' family tree? It doesn't seem to make sense. And then we have next person is Ruth. Now, we've spoken about Ruth quite a lot in our church the last couple of months. I've done a series on her. But what happened to her? She was from Moab, and she married an Israelite guy who was living in her land. But he died, his brother died, his father died, everyone died in the family. And Ruth moved from Moab to Israel with her mother-in-law. And she says these great words in Ruth chapter 1. She says to Naomi, "Don't ask me to leave you or turn back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but my death to separate us." You know, Ruth was committed to Naomi. She ends up marrying Boaz. And God blesses her, and she becomes a granny to the Jewish king, a great granny even to the Jewish king, King David. So Ruth's problem was she wasn't a Jew. Now, for the Jewish readers, this is crazy that it's been emphasized in Jesus' genealogy, but it shows God's got a bigger plan here. The final woman is Bathsheba. We don't know much about Bathsheba. The only thing we know about Bathsheba is that she slept with King David when she was married to another guy. Basically, King David got her pregnant while her husband was away. David then got her husband killed. She ends up marrying David. It was a bit awful. Now, we don't know in those situations about how much say she had in having an affair with King David, because society was very different in those days. But whatever happened, King David still spotted her naked. King David still sent her across. She still slept with King David. And she was always tainted by this affair. And that's just... she had to live with it. So you've got this adulteress. You've got a couple of prostitutes. You've got three non-Jews. And then the one Jewish woman you have put in there has an affair, and husband gets murdered by the person she has an affair with. It's kind of a bit interesting. That's just the women. We got the men, where there were liars, there were guys who used prostitutes, there were murderers, there were con men, there were dictators, there were idolaters, there were evil that was done by many of these men was extreme. And I find it amazing that this is the family that God chooses to be born into. On the face of it, surely God should have been born in a righteous family, but he didn't. He was born into this messed up family. And in 1 Corinthians 1 verse 26, it says this, and going forwards, it says, "Remember, dear brothers and sisters, that a few of you were wise in the world's eyes, or powerful or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God chose the things the world considers foolish in order to shame those that are wise. He chose things that are powerless to shame those that are powerful. God chose things that are despised by the world, things counted for nothing at all, and used them to bring nothing to bring nothing to what the world considers important." Guys, I just want to put you a couple of things even here that we can learn from this genealogy. The first thing is this: don't judge a book by its cover. You know, often we quote Samuel from the Old Testament when he said, "Man looks on the outside, but God looks on the heart." But the truth of the matter is, we still look on the outside. And it could be so easy to look at Jesus' family and say, "Oh my goodness, they're awful people, they were terrible." But God still saw them as people who could play a part in his big plan. Take Tamar, as we mentioned there. She pretended to be a prostitute to seduce her father-in-law so she'd get pregnant. Can you blame her? In her culture, she would have been despised for not having any children. People look at her, "Why didn't she get pregnant? What happened? She had two men she was married to. How didn't she get pregnant?" Oh, it's a bit dodgy. She was desperate. She knew she wanted descendants for her husband. She was abandoned by her father-in-law. It could be so easy to judge her. But unless we've been in her situation, even if we have been in her situation, it would have been different for us from her. There's one thing the Bible is clear about. It is, do not judge. Jesus couldn't be clearer when he said these words: "Do not judge, and you will not be judged." Basically, he said, don't judge under any circumstance. You know, as Christians, we're really good at judging, but God doesn't want us to judge. Often we don't know what's going on in people's situations. It's easy to pass judgments, but we have to resist, because it's not our place to judge. Our place is to love. Our place is to encourage. Our place is to help people become everything Christ has called them to be. It's not my job to be their judge. Guys, you know, I've listened in the past to people who passed judgmental comments to me that weren't right. And I had to make a choice to not listen to them. To actually stay at time. You know what? It's easy to judge, but I'm not going to listen to judgmental comments because I've got to encourage. You know, Tamar clearly does not do things the way God would want. But God looks beyond her sin. And he looks at the person who he loved enough to mention in his family tree. Guys, we need to look beyond people's sin sometimes, beyond their failures, to who they can be in God and the part they can play in his story. The second thing that's really important for us to learn through Jesus' genealogy is this. God uses imperfect people to bring around his perfect plan. As I shared there a minute ago, it says there, God uses the foolish things in the world in order to shame the wise. Now when we accept Jesus into our family, we're adopted into his church family. We're adopted, we take on the same genealogy as Jesus effectively. We fully, everything that comes, all the past comes with us. When we become Christians, we are full sons and daughters of God. God didn't take, the reason when we become Christians we're not automatically taken up to heaven is this, is because God has called us to play a part in his plan here on earth. And you may be imperfect, you may be messed up, you may be saying, Jim, you don't know my story. Hey, I don't care about your story if I'm honest with you. Your past is your past, and that's where it belongs, in the past. But it doesn't stop you achieving great things for God in the future and playing a part for him in the future. You know, you may feel imperfect, you may feel a failure, you may feel a mess up. But God still loves you. And in the same way God celebrated these women in the Old Testament, God celebrates the fact that you can play a part in his... get the right words out of there. God celebrates the fact that you can play a part in his plan today. Guys, if God was to shake our church and was to be judgmental on our church as much as we can be judgmental on people, none of us would be good enough to play a part in his plan. But God loves you. God loves you despite of your past mistakes. And he wants to help you become the person you're called to be. So if you're struggling, you think God can't use me, guys, God can use you.